This is Sons of the Flag Radio, brought to you by Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. Our mission at Sons of the Flag is to revolutionize burn care and the quality of life for veterans, first responders, and families. Sons of the Flag believes that the future of burn care resides in research and development. Our vision is to accelerate the process of testing leading technologies and pushing them into circulation for immediate use by burn survivors across the nation. We are truly thankful for the support that everyone has always shown us, and as we go into our 10th year and as we make this mission grow further, we are truly again thankful for the continued support. Even through these last couple of years when things have been tough, we've never skipped a beat, and we're again truly thankful for all that you guys have done for us. We're going to start tonight's show by honoring our brothers and sisters that we've lost since our last episode. And we also want to make sure we pause for a moment and recognize our fallen law enforcement heroes and our military personnel that we've lost. Our fallen firefighters since our last show are Vincent Malvo, Garrett Ramos, Wesley Adams, John Ruddy, Anthony Carfagno, Marshawn Plummer, Bryant Gladney, and Thomas Reese. Let us take a moment of silence for these fallen heroes. Well, 10th year, starting 10th year, right?
Yeah, what better way to kick it off than with a Navy SEAL turned firefighter?
Yes, so I met this dude back in September.
Yep.
At the Red Coat Challenge, bird threw together that monstrosity of a of an event.
And, that nobody got hurt on and yeah. Kind of went off without a hitch, which was super bizarre.
The weather was perfect. I mean,
nobody got ran over by an ATV or anything.
No, nobody died. Nobody got injured. So it was a success.
There was one snake scare. And that's it. Texas. I think that's about it.
That's Texas for you.
And somebody burnt their arm playing shooting a bow and arrow.
Oh,
you play with toys, you get hurt.
Yeah. No, we're excited to have this guy. I saw him on Bird's Frogman Friday episode, mm-hmm. and I finally got to meet him face-to-face at the Red Coat Challenge. It's Andrew Crocker, Kansas City firefighter, retired Navy SEAL, however you want to say it. Brother, thank you for joining us for this episode, man. We're glad to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So what a better way to kick off the new year. Like Bemis said, this is SOTF's 10th year, and it's been wild to look back at all the pictures, and now we're kicking off 2022 with an awesome guest. So this is a great way to start the new year.
No, man, absolutely. It's the 10th year?
Yeah. I think their first event was 2022. He did the quilt, and he did the legacy jump, and then I think he went out to FDIC. So I've been going back through all the different pictures, and man, it's wild. I mean, I've been here for six of them, and to think that it's 10, it's pretty crazy.
That's nuts. Actually, the first time I met Birdman was at SHOT Show in Vegas in 2013.
Oh, holy hell.
Wow.
Yeah so he's just started.
Our paths have crossed many a times in the teams. We just didn't know it.
That's crazy.
Hey, yeah, that first time I met him, I was at SHOT Show. I'd just gotten out of the military.
So you retired in 2013?
Yeah, I got out after 8 years, 9 months.
8 years, 9 months. And so you went straight into the fire service right after that?
I attempted to. It is a hard business to get into. It's very sought after.
Very competitive.
So actually I was born and raised in California, so I wanted to, and then my wife's family is back in Kansas City, and I wanted to stay close to family when we were getting out. That was kind of a hers and I's deal. So actually, we talked about moving back to Dallas too after we went to Chris Kyle's funeral.
Yeah.
But we realized having kids and no family around is real rough.
No doubt. So you're from California?
Yeah, I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo, California.
So
you know where that's at.
So why did you choose to not try to apply out there in California, just to get out of California or just look for a better life for the kiddos?
No, I love the area. I think, though, trying to get into the fire service back there it's rough. And we had just had my oldest son. And to get into the fire service, there's most likely I would have had to pay for a lot of stuff right off the bat, mm-hmm. So which would have been okay. But I would have had to volunteer and not bringing in a paycheck with a kid and family already started up would have been rough.
Ouch.
Yeah. You know, the thing
so
is, no, go
yeah,
ahead.
I've heard it's like 5 years of volunteering, seasonal, and other stuff
that's
to get on
unbelievable.
full time. So that's where I love Missouri back here.
Yeah.
Amazing people. So, and then the Kansas City Fire Department, you can get on with no credentials, just being 19 and under 30 and just going through their interview process. They'll put you through a fire academy and your EMT.
Is it civil service? Do they have certain age requirements?
Yes. So it's 19 to 30.
19 to 30.
You have to be in that age range.
Okay. So they wouldn't take my old geriatric ass in there.
Who knows? Maybe they'll make an exception.
I doubt it.
You
man.
Do have some experience, so maybe yeah. they'll take that into account. So is that exclusive to California that you would have to volunteer for that long to get put on?
Man, you know, I don't know for sure.
It
I
defers.
Have a lot of friends out there. Yeah, I mean, that would be a question probably for someone who's really tried. I kind of just dabbled in it. I actually went to Miramar
yeah.
College, got my EMT there. And then I was talking, there was a firefighter paramedic that was there, and they were in with like the San Diego guys. And he was like, man, it's a hell of a long process.
You know, it's
so
funny
I was
because,
like, man, yeah.
I love some California firefighters, dude. They're some of the most badass dudes there are. They're genuinely
oh,
amazing
for sure.
guys. And it's funny. You know, I work up here just north of Dallas, up in Salina, and we actually have dudes that live in Salina and Prosper just south of us that still work for like LA County, and they're flying from Dallas to LA County, doing their shifts,
yeah.
into their trades, and then flying back home. Well, one, because of the cost
yep.
of living, but their family, they, you know, more bang for their buck here. But there's some squared away dudes, man. I have nothing but the ultimate respect for those guys. To get onto a big department like that, it's not an easy task. So kudos to them,
no,
man.
No, not to mention when you're LA County, you're not just doing houses and buildings. I mean, you have everything from huge, large open areas to
yeah.
high rises. I mean, it's a very diverse type area for sure. So, and apparently on Kansas City, I've heard, and I don't know any of the guys, but apparently some guys that were single would take time off of here and then go work like a month or two straight
uh-huh.
out in San Francisco too.
Really?
So,
oh,
yeah,
cow.
They would double dip by doing that.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
So we jumped ahead. We jumped ahead
yeah.
many years. So yeah. let's back it up a little bit. tell us. Yeah, we jumped right into the fire department, didn't we? Tell us a little bit about, you know, when you knew you wanted to be a SEAL. What you were like whenever you were younger. Was that just like your ambition? Was the military always kind of in your head, or, you know, what was your thought process?
I think I had a different entry into the Navy SEALs than a lot of other people, a little bit of a different story. I grew up in San Francisco, California, played a ton of sports growing up. Everything that I could get, my parents could get me to, they would put me in. My dad was a police officer, everything from a detective, sergeant, to just working the beat and actually yeah, so he was kind of my role model growing up as far as like serving others. And then my mother worked in, I think she dabbled in Mary Kay for a little bit and then worked her way up in the hotel industry and ended up getting pretty high in that area working in hotels. So just growing up, we were busy. San Luis Obispo, where I grew up, is we have a college there, Division I college, that's known for like their agricultural. And they actually have good baseball and wrestling. So growing up there, I kind of lived in the city. The city was growing north of Santa Barbara. And we grew up kind of in a suburb type area. But we did have some country, which was fun. I mean, got to do some roundups with some other kids and everything. But growing up, I mean, I was just a kid. I was never really great at anything, but I was okay at everything growing up. I could run. I could swim. I did triathlons growing up along with baseball, basketball, and football. Surfed a ton and just I loved the ocean. So I think that was kind of my, like, once it came time to get out of high school and being like, hey, what do you want to do? I was like, I don't have a clue. Actually, it was pretty funny. I watched a movie, Sons of the Flag. Or not Sons of the Flag. No, what am I talking? God, what is the one? They're in Africa.
Oh, under
Tears of the Sun.
Tears of the Sun.
Tears of the Sun. Yeah, that's okay. So I watched that and I was like, hey man, those guys are pretty badass. So my dad was like, hey, you're thinking about the military, let's take you down to the recruiting offices. So I was like, man, I want to be like an Army Ranger, a Marine. And my dad was kind of like, sure, being a father, really proud that I want to do something, but kind of scared a little bit at the same time, right. Being like, yeah, I don't know if I want to throw you into that. Let's check out the Navy, you know, see what they got. And I was like, I want to be a Navy SEAL. And my dad, I think he just felt more comfortable being like, hey, those guys are, when they're top notch, I'd feel good with him trying to do that. So I got a SEAL contract. My senior year, finished out my senior year, and ended up getting into the Navy doing that. So I don't know why. He kind of led me that way, convinced me that way. For some reason, I went into the Navy. I remember one thing the recruiter told me, which, and if anyone young is ever listening to this, you can leave home and go do other stuff, and everyone else and all your friends will probably still be in your hometown if you really want to go back to it.
Yep.
Still doing the same dumb stuff they're doing. At least I found that out. So it's probably good for me to get away and grow up. And being in the military, you really got to grow up quick.
So
I ended up, yeah.
So you went through crazy. Basic in the Navy, and when did you enter?
Hey, I want to ask, what was the culture shock like going to Great Lakes from Santa Barbara?
Oh, dude, it snowed, and I think we went outside for like a total of 4 or 5 days. We were like snowed into our barracks.
Oh my God.
It was different. When we did graduate basic, my uncle lives in that surrounding area at the time.
Right.
We went out. I was like, what is all this snow and what is going on? I had been like snowboarding here and there, but like,
yeah,
glamour snowboarding, like Tahoe and a couple other
but
places.
But there's something
like,
different about Lake Michigan winter. It's brutal, man.
Oh, it is rough. And that wind there just cuts through you. I'd never felt anything like that. Like surfing growing up, didn't care. Didn't mind any of the cold, nothing went there. But that like, oh my God, that wind was nuts.
Oh man. Yeah. No, I went to Great Lakes for a little bit and I had some issues up there, but I remember the hell that place was. It was ungodly cold.
I suffered through I suffered through the big freeze of Texas. I'm good. I'm good with that. I've had my fill of icy terrain. I've walked to the store, doing that. Nope. I'm done. I'm all right.
So I know the physical training at it, you know, during boot camp to gear you towards, you know, buds, you know, obviously you felt like you were pretty well prepared going that route, correct? Cause
prepared. I mean, with my athletic background, I was never like in any sports. I was never like, hey man, that's the star. Like I was just that like fifth starter on the basketball team or just that other kid that showed up. So, I mean, I did mostly team sports growing up. I did triathlons too. I actually saw my coach for the first time in well over a decade when I went home during Christmas.
Oh, wow.
So, and I told him I definitely owed him a lot with Roger Warren. So, he's a hell of a coach in person. So, but yeah, I just was a normal, everyday person. I didn't feel like I stood out in anything in running, swimming. I don't know. I was just that tough kid, I guess, that didn't just care. I don't know.
Determination and grit.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't look at it that way. I just hated losing. It's not even that I like winning. Like, I hate losing in any and everything. So definitely, I mean, we have downtime every once in a while at the fire department. Any games we play there, they'll tell you I'm not necessarily a great loser.
No, it's super competitive, man.
Yeah, I get a little upset at times. So, and I don't care if it's my first time doing something. I don't like doing it, whether it's playing cards or playing wiffle ball. I'm not a fan of losing.
It's like, I was playing a game against my 6-year-old son yesterday. I was ready to kill him because he kept whooping me. I'm like, this isn't right. My wife's like, you got to chill out. You know he's six, right? I know. I don't lose.
Dude,
you don't understand.
I've got to be like the worst person playing video games when I lose too. Like, I don't play video games hardly ever. But then so I like jump on like Call of Duty with my son who's 9 years old and he's just whipping my butt or like in Fortnite.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, man, I'm done. I'm good. Yep. Thanks, buddy.
Yep. So, same here. I can't do it. Nope. Yep.
So buds, you know, let's talk about buds for a little bit. I know from Bird, you know, I've heard, you know, stories. Where was your mind going into buds? You know, was it what you expected? Was it more? Was it less? You know, how did it prepare you to take that next step and, you know, pretty much your life?
Oh man, it was really hard. I was very young, which I think played into my psyche and kind of that young and dumb type, because I was 19 years old going in. So I was really felt like everyone's little younger brother.
Yeah.
Got along really well with the older guys. So I think that helped me out. I think the average age is around like 24 for guys making it in. I had zero college experience or life experience really outside of high school. So I think it ended up helping me, because I just didn't really expect anything. I know that I had like friends and people, acquaintances back in my hometown that really were like, you're not going to do that. Like, just really didn't believe in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that really just that, like, hey, screw these guys, I can do whatever I want type thing. Be like, prove them wrong, really helped me out, especially in those hard times when you're wet, cold. And actually, I didn't mind the wet and cold. I think the surfing played into me not caring. Like, surf torture, everyone says that's the worst thing ever. To me, that was like my break.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we can lay here and get cold. Turn off your mind and you just lay there. Like, they don't do anything to you. You might just have to yell a couple of times, but you're laying there. There's no physical exertion.
Yeah.
Because that helped me out. I really hated, like, carrying the boats and logs. It was horrible. That, to me, was, like, the worst. I didn't mind the own course or, like, the long swims, the runs. Not a great runner, but it wasn't bad. It was really just the carrying the heavy stuff. Dude, my boat crew in first phase, I don't think we won anything ever. Like, you got no that whole pays to be a winner, like, I don't even know what that feels like. In all of first phase, I had no idea. Yeah, like, I mean, we had a fun boat crew and stuff with, like, kids dropping out left and right. I was like, I didn't know who was left at the end of Hell Week in my boat crew. Yeah, it was nuts. It actually, another thing that helped out is when we had to go to A school before we went to Buds. There was two guys that I had met at A school that we all checked in, like, the exact same day. I actually picked one of them up from the airport. And we checked in. All three of us got in the same room the same day, and we all graduated Buds together.
That's awesome.
I don't know if that ever really happens, like, to live with each other the entire way through Buds in the same room. So it obviously doesn't happen too much, because when we graduated or made it through Hell Week, they only put two mattresses on the floor. They have you sleep on the floor or whatever so you don't fall off, hurt yourself, elevate your leg type thing.
Right.
There was two mattresses on the floor. And these two guys, like, I'm a small dude. These two guys are good size. I was like, where do I fit in this equation? Like, it was like an Oreo going on. It was weird. Like, hey, guys, can we get another mattress? They're like, we don't plan for three guys all at once.
Oh, man.
Like, awesome. Thanks, guys.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but, I mean, Duds was just – I think I just was young and dumb, and the old guys, for some reason, liked me. And really just kind of took care of me. And yeah, just it helped out that way. I think it's a little different than most of the people with life experience for sure.
So yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it too. Like, it just going in there whenever you're young, and then you kind of get that little brother treatment, being looked out after a little bit more, maybe a bit more, and a bit more drive to you. You're like, I'm not going to let these older people step over me. I've got shit that I need to get done.
Yeah. It just, that whole mentality of, like, if I get through an hour, then I'll figure out the next hour type thing. Like, I don't know any better. I don't know any different.
Yeah.
Like, and it sounds kind of bad, but I was also, I don't know why growing up, I was that kid who, like, I didn't care what was happening. Like, the pain will stop. If the pain stops, then obviously I'm not here anymore. So who cares at that point? It doesn't hurt. Like, it's just kind of weird. My mom brought something up the other day, because I used to surf a decent amount. We had a shark attack where, I don't know if it was male or female, got attacked and died. And, well, the surf was great the next morning. So I was like, Mom, I'm going to go with my buddy. She's like, no, you're not. Like, at that point, like, I could drive. My friends could drive. And I was like, hey, Mom, it's my time. See you, Mom. She was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
She just was like, okay, I guess.
Well, you put it that way.
Yeah. He's like, hey, when it's my time, it's my time.
So you graduate Buds at, so you're what, 21 at that time or so?
I think I was 20.
20.
Turned 21, and was it in Buds or was it in the teams? I think it was, oh man, actually, it might have been an SQT I grad is when I turned 21.
Okay, so from when you graduated there, so the next step was obviously SQT, but when you got to the teams, what was the life like towards the teams?
Man, it was really just, I just feel like I have some weird situations that I just hop into. But we just graduated right when Team 3, which I had got assigned to, was coming back from like Ramadi 06 and all the real bad 06 deployments.
Yeah.
So we were supposed to go home for 2 weeks, but Mark Lee passed.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, hey, we need your guys' help. Put on your dress and uniforms. Go to downtown San Diego Airport and help out in any way you can. I was like, absolutely. So me and a bunch of the new guys put on our uniforms and we go and we actually helped unload Mark Lee's body at the San Diego Airport. And that was actually the first time I met like Jocko, Chris Kyle, and those guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just weird. Yeah, it was very sobering, I guess, being like, oh, wow, we really went from like training to the big leagues real quick type thing.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that was a funny story later on, though, is that we all went drinking when I was still brand new. It was within that first month or two because unfortunately, it was like Mark Lee and then Mike Mansoor passed all kind of those months. So there's a lot of we all go to this bar downtown. I all the new guys get invited to like buy drinks, meet all the older guys. So we're there. And Chris Kyle goes, hey, because I ended up getting assigned to Bruiser, Pasadena Bruiser.
Okay.
Charlotte platoon, and they were like, hey, Chris is like, I need you to buy Jocko a daiquiri.
Oh, shit.
Oh, like, shit.
What? I was like, who's Jocko? I don't even know who this guy is at this point. Like, I didn't know he's officer enlisted. No idea. He's like, I was like, okay. I see this man. I was like, wow, he's kind of a big dude.
Yeah.
Which Chris is not small by any means either. He's like, hey, buy him a daiquiri. And I wanted the most foo-foo drink you can get it in. I walk up to the bar and the bartender, I order it. The bartender looks at me and is like, what do you want?
Oh my God.
Like, I need a strawberry daiquiri, please. And the biggest foo-foo cup you can get. She's like, okay. I mean, I don't know any better. Like, I'm sure she's seen this a million times at this point.
Yeah. She's like, oh no.
Her eyes are
another
rolling.
One.
Yeah.
Oh dude. And so I go and I deliver this thing. I'm like, hey Jocko, I got you a drink. And I'm like, strawberry daiquiri, got like an umbrella, foo-foo glass.
Dude.
Looking to try and hand it to him. And I don't know if you guys have met Jocko, but he has this like 1,000-yard stare. Like he's staring through you. Like that just makes you feel like, oh my God, what is it? Did I do something wrong? Am I supposed to talk? And he's just silent, staring at me. I was like, oh God.
Oh,
so Chris kind of bumps me. He's like, hey man, just put it down. I don't know how long I was standing there, just staring at him, staring at each other. It's like, yeah. So I set it down, and next thing I know, I'm getting choked out. So it was a good new guy experience. But yeah,
oh,
so,
dude.
Yeah, that was one of the first times I got to meet Chris and Jocko.
That is awesome.
It's a hell of an introduction.
Golly.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was a good time. So I think Chris liked me ever since that, and Charlie Platoon, I think they liked me. They seemed to like me.
Well, they know you'll buy drinks.
they took care of me. Absolutely. I mean, you need a strawberry daiquiri? I got you, bro.
Oh, my God. No, so your first deployment, where, you know how when you get that first call when you're riding the rig, you know, your mind's just going all over the place, right? What was that first deployment like for you?
You know, it was a busy one, but it was definitely different. Our workup leading up to it was, I don't know if it was necessarily exactly what I thought. Like it was tough. I was very thankful to be in Charlie Platoon with a bunch of the guys that I was with, because I mean they had all this knowledge from like Ramadi and everything that they helped pass down, and just I mean the knowledge that they had and the way they took care of us as new guys. I mean it was. No way easy. I mean, it was just one of those things that, like, certain things they did were just to make a frogman tough type thing. Like, you're gonna suck, your stuff is gonna suck for you as a new guy, but if you worked hard and they saw it, they wouldn't necessarily be like, hey, good job. They'd be like, all right, man, we're going out for drinks. You coming?
Yeah.
Like, you don't say no. So you're like, yeah, man. And they would, like, take care of you.
Yeah.
Type thing. So just work your ass off. Keep your head down. The first deployment was, it was good. It was busy. It wasn't as much action as I wanted. We're out in Western Iraq when BIOP was going on in 08. So they took a couple guys here and there to go out there. So I stayed out west. We started using side-by-sides, patrolling all the long patrols and the borders and stuff.
Yeah.
So it wasn't not as much action as I wanted, but, I mean, we were busy doing stuff every night, for sure.
That's awesome. You started highlighting some stuff that I really, really like. You know, you're talking about listening to basically your senior men, right? I love that concept. It and the great thing about it, no matter what profession you're in, you know, it transcends every profession. But with the fire service and the military, it's I think it's the most crucial point of training is that sometimes these new guys, and actually not new, it's every new guy that comes into a job, just you need to shut your damn mouth and listen. And I think that's the hard thing that most people tend to realize these days. And I mean, if you look at the military community, the best way to be successful is to listen to those guys who have the stories. Listen to what they tell you. Listen to what they show you. You know, just like the fire service, when they're telling you something about, hey, we went on a call this one time, we saw this, this, and this, this is what we did. Man, you take that advice, you take that information, and you use it. You store it in your Rolodex. I mean, because you're going to eventually need it somewhere down the road.
Absolutely. The big thing, too, with that platoon that was eye-opening to me, and I see a lack of it sometimes in the fire service now, is you don't have to be the captain or the highest person to have that experience and pass it on and be a leader.
Yep.
You could just be normally one of the guys, the firefighter that's been there for 7, 8, 10, 12, however many years, and just be in the right spot, certain experiences. I mean, so a lot of guys are just in the right place at the right time and can learn a lot and pass it down, which I think can get lost sometimes because I think a lot of the generational aspects now, a lot of guys want to go straight to, like, the chief and be like, hey, I don't want to learn this or do that or whatever. And it's like, hey, man, did you go through your firefighters, your drivers, your captains, and all that way up? So, and it's just really, if you can find guys that have certain experiences, and I feel like they kind of stand out at times. You just have to have your eyes open enough and your ears open enough and your mouth closed enough to be able to find those guys. And it was really, really pushed in that first platoon that's like, hey, man, this is where we want you to go. And you could see how the chief and our LPO and everyone in OICs would treat certain guys in our platoon that were just either second or third platoon guys. You'd be like, all right, man, they're treating him this way. And there's a reason. What is it? Okay, he does all this stuff correctly. He spends all this extra time going over this stuff. This guy never makes a mistake with his comms. Setting it up, like, he just doesn't make the mistakes, and it's like, why is that? So you just keep watching, following, and ask questions.
Right. I mean, it's like rig checks, man. You get to the rig each morning, you go through your finite details of what the day entails. You know, you got to check your equipment, you got to make sure all your shit's squared away, because when it's not squared away, there's dire consequences that are going to be paid.
Oh man, it's huge, and so we're big. We have the station I'm at now is pretty amazing, super busy station in the inner city. And so I think I'm hitting a year at that station coming up here shortly, but just a lot of good experience. And those guys, no one's above going and checking out the rig,
right?
Which I really like. It doesn't matter who it is, the captain or the most experienced guy. We have some drivers with a ton of time on. They're out there helping wash the rig, clean everything, clean tools, first ones to check out the rig and get the saw started. And so it's good. It's nice to be able to look at the guys and be like, oh, they're still doing all the little stuff too. That's why they're successful on the fire ground. That's why they're making saves, chopping holes, getting water, all that.
Yeah. So you did your 8 years in the SEALs. And so you gained, how many total deployments did you go on?
I did 2 deployments at Team 3. And then I became a instructor at Trade-Ed after my second deployment for 3 years.
Okay,
so right before I got out.
So you now then became the educator, and so you take all that information and then you decide to go towards the fire service route.
Yep.
So with obviously yep. As we talked earlier, you guys made the decision to upmove towards Kansas City because of your wife's family. Let's talk about that process, because I know it's a competitive process, just like selection probably is for Buds to get into Buds. You know, you had to earn that SEAL contract, and that's a competitive contract to get and to hold, you know, pretty much mark your spot. But so is, you know, the fire service, the entire testing process. What was the process like overall for you to get hired? How many places did you have to end up testing?
Man, Kansas City was kind of my number one, because I knew I could. The interview process just kind of lined up right. And when I was in the training command, Tradet, they were like, hey, what do you want to do? When I was up for one of my evals, I was like, I'm going to be a firefighter. And the OIC or the CMC was like, all right, I know what you need to do. Because I got buddies who are firefighters. He actually put me through EMT.
Nice.
And started, like, kind of getting me organized. Even I had an interview process, and I was still in. He was like, how much time you need off? I was like, I'd like 2 days just to fly back to my family, get set up, do the interview, and I'll fly right back. And he was like, yeah, man, no problem. Your time off. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. He took care of me. I actually did my interview process while I was still in.
Really?
And their process is a little bit different. I mean, there's quite a few applicants when I applied, and they rank everyone one through however many. And then that list or whatever is good for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we, that was a little bit down, or they're a little bit down on, like, finances and everything, kind of still, the economy hadn't bounced back yet. So I wasn't sure. They had put a hiring freeze on all of Kansas City for all city employees for a little bit. So I was like, I was 29. And so once you turn 30, you're done.
Oh, wow.
So I had a one and done chance in Kansas City. Yeah. So I had already gotten out. The list was still going. I would call almost like every month or so to one of the assistant chiefs and be like, hey, are you guys, is it coming through? Because I got ranked like fifth. He was like, no, I'm sure later on. He was like, dude, you're the most annoying person I've ever had. Because I literally would just call him and be like, hey, man, checking in. How's everything going?
Thin line between annoying and persistent.
Like, yep. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, dude, he was super annoying, I'm sure. So we did that, and it was coming up on a year of me getting out of the military. So I was just kind of stay-at-home dad. We were putting my wife through school as she was working as a nurse at KU Hospital.
Okay.
And we really, like, saved up for a year. And I was like, we'll be good with me not having a job or income for a year. But, like, once that year hit, it was like,
something's gonna happen. Yeah.
Like, I got to start, like, I'll start washing dishes, working at McDonald's. I don't care. Like, I'm not above any work. But, yep. Like, time for me to start having an income. And then I can do two things at once, hopefully. So it's coming up on that, and Central Jackson County Fire Department, their district, had like a pay-for academy. So I ended up going to their fire academy, still being on the hiring list there. And I put my put my time in there, got my fire 1 and 2, my hazmats, already had my EMT. So, and they ended up liking me, and I think that I could have potentially got on there, had like – right at the end, 2 months to go until that list expires, Kansas City's like, hey, we're starting a class. You in? I'm like, yep, let's go.
That's
but really,
awesome.
I just kind of got lucky. It wasn't, I guess it was long and drawn out, but not a complicated process for me.
Yeah, that's luck. That's awesome. I know for, like, down here, I mean, there's dudes. I had to test 14 times.
Sheesh.
I made it to two.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I made it to two Chiefs interviews. Finally, somebody said, okay, but, you know, we went through multiple physical agilities. I never failed a physical. It's just that I guess I was an asshole in the interview panel, so they passed up. So it's always cool to hear somebody that can make it in, you know,
when it really came
easier.
Down to the wire, too.
Yeah.
That's dude, super intense.
It did. It talked about nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just finished my fire 1 and 2. Like, the academy's actually overlapped. So I was actually excited. I had, like, I think 2 or 3 weeks left at the Central Jackson County Fire Department school or whatever. And I was still working from Kansas City then during the day through going through their academy. And you have to go through their academy no matter what. So if you don't have your credentials, you get them. If you do have your credentials, then you're learning the way that they do stuff.
Right.
So it's very specific, I guess, to there, not just all of Missouri and everything.
Is the
So
period
literally,
shortened? Is that class is
it's still about the same. I mean, it's once you get into Kansas City, I think it's like almost like 6 months if you have like your EMT and then your fire one and twos and hazmat that kind of send you through.
okay.
So it honestly, all that was a blur. On top of that, my wife was pregnant, and
Nice.
then we have a kid. Well, I'm at like the very end of my academy. We have my second kid, my daughter. So it's all a blur at this point. At that, I was surviving. I mean, it probably felt like going through a hell week as far as like sleep deprivation, not sleeping. I was doing during the morning, wake up early, go to Kansas City's Fire Academy, and then immediately get off, hopefully get some food, and go straight to Central Jackson County's Fire Academy, and then come home to my wife who's exhausted with
Yeah.
a brand new child.
Yeah, you're living in a blur. Yeah.
Dude.
It
Golly.
was. It really was. It was. I haven't thought about it in a while. It was a little bit crazier than I thought.
You're like, I know this year happened. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I know this year
Yeah.
happened.
Yeah, it existed. So.
That's funny.
So we usually talk about the Bird and Bemis talk about the brotherhood aspect of the SEALs can in comparison to the being a firefighter and having to be around your guys on some 24 hours on a regular basis, and they really become your back and they become your brothers. What is that experience like th having lived in both both worlds?
Man, it's the same type of people. It really is. Probably just got led different ways in life, for sure. I mean, it's that shift work. Everyone's together when they're together. Really family oriented when you're home in the SEAL teams. I mean, you're home. You're with your family. You really want to spend that time with them. So it really just blended into it. And I think that's kind of the reason I wanted to go that way. So I mean, putting my wife through school and getting out. I mean, I just was up for chief when I got out. So, I mean, it was really that turning point of being like, hey man, you need to get out or stay in type thing. So for some reason it just led me, my dad being a police officer, like I knew that brotherhood had been around the fire department a little bit here and there. So just I think really that shift work, working those hours and being able to be like, hey, work 24 hours, be home for 48. Like every day's a Friday, baby. Let's go.
There you go.
Did you ever contemplate
Yeah.
becoming a police officer?
I did a little bit. What my dad did was amazing. I think his legacy, I think, in our hometown and everything would have been a lot to live up to for me. Probably not to him in his head or anything, but to me. I mean, he would just, for our community, some of the stuff he did, I mean, you could go to starting so many youth programs that he did. He was a DARE officer that coached baseball. I mean, any and everything. I think it would have been hard not to mention. I didn't want to, I mean, I probably could have tried to get on at his police department and moved back in California up north a little bit. But, I think the firefighting, using the saws, the axes, like the, because I was a breacher, comms guy in the team. So I think it just kind of blended my natural progression of my life to towards that way, being able to just really break shit, honestly.
So you obviously have stressed your dad to the max now, the military choice and then,
Yeah.
your
Oh
decision
my
to go
God.
that way, but then to go to the fire route, was
Yeah, he's, yeah.
is he asking himself, man,
Yeah.
what did I do wrong, man? What
Dude,
happened?
I'm sure he is. He's like, hey, I try to lead him down this awesome, nice path. Great kid. And holy cow, just can you not put yourself like in danger for a day or something?
So
Yeah.
how did the SEAL the training, obviously, I mean, it prepared you for going to firefighting, because you said you're kind of in the ghetto area right
Yeah,
now.
we're in a lower income area for sure. We are high volume, call volume, really high, high fire volume. Yeah, it's definitely a busy area. I think like we have a lot of great areas and departments around us too, but I really think that they kind of look towards that aggressive firefighting style that we have
Yeah,
for the
the lost
interior.
art of
And
firefighting
yeah,
now.
dude, we have amazing chiefs, an amazing department, and as far as like house fires, I'd put us, our department, up against anyone in the entire country as far as like a regular house fire. So it's aggressive and fun for sure.
That's good, man. I love that. You know, the fire service itself is you all you got to do is get on Facebook and you can see it's completely divided because it's just like everything else in America right now.
Yeah, we've seen that with the different conferences and all that kind of stuff. It seems to be a like hell, just like the country. It seems to be like this, this dichotomy, just splitting people in half on how they want to feel and what their thoughts are and which direction it needs to go.
Well, it's the thing that I don't like to see, and I love that you keep reiterating the aggressiveness that you guys have, is that I think too many of the keyboard warriors out there are able to get themselves to the forefront and basically say, no, it's going to be myself before you. I'm going to take care of myself before you. You didn't enlist in the SEALs to put yourself before others. You put others before yourself. The same with the fire service, you know, it's a service, we're providing. Yeah. You enlisted, swore the oath, and to sit there and to say that, no, I'm going to be safe and make sure that everything is safe before I can make entry into this building. But no, just look at New York yesterday.
Oh gosh. Yeah. That's heartbreaking.
Those savages, dude, they went in there and whooped the shit out of that thing. And it's unfortunate the amount of lives lost. But what they did, is aggressive interior firefighting.
Can you imagine how many they saved?
Yeah,
my God. Oh, yeah.
And I can't even believe the command and control. Was it like 200 firefighters?
Dude.
That they were command and control and on scene?
I saw the aerial of the scene, and my mind just started just going haywire. I'm like, unbelievable.
Well, there was, what, almost 20 injuries? Those injuries easily could have been deaths if they hadn't have worked it that way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, at least as far as my mindset, and I think our firehouse, it's a high-risk, high-reward type thing. Like,
yeah.
If there's a house on fire and there's a potential for someone in there, like, yeah, I have to go to a burning building. It's not safe.
That's what you have gear for.
And we know, yeah, like, I've always been like it's a we before me type person.
Yeah.
So, and I think our station and our department is really good. Like, yeah, you have to take care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself and I get in a bad situation, then I put all my guys in a situation trying to get me out of the burning building, all this other, like, if you get stuck in a burning building, at least this is my mentality, right or wrong, this is how I think. Like, my buddy, I go in there with my buddy, and we're paired up, we're together. Something happens to him, like, I'm in there with you. I'm not leaving until we both get out.
Yep.
That's just the way it is, at least with me. So
leave no man behind.
Yeah, like, that's my mindset, and I think it plays to, we make a lot of saves and save a lot of houses, and a lot of the area we're in, these people don't have insurance.
Yeah.
They just don't. Like, I think that gets taken for granted in certain areas where people have insurance. And it's like, yeah, man, it's okay. All your stuff will get replaced. These people are back in this house, like, after the investigation is done. And this is where they're living, in this burned down house.
Golly.
And that's, you know,
like, yeah. Like, I can't imagine what these people go through. So, I mean, really, to do my small part and risk a little to help get this and save something for them, it goes a long way.
Well, I mean, at least when you were in the teams, you guys were able to, hopefully, most of the time, probably plan out your missions. You knew what each guy was going to do, what each role was going to do. You knew how the mission was hopefully going to go out, where you were going. You had good intel, hopefully. Just like the fire service, it's about going out there and pre-planning, knowing what your crew is going to do, knowing what your guys are going to do. When you get out there, you guys are training and understanding what each person's job on that fire ground is going to be, no matter what. When A hits, B is doing this. And it's a continual conversation. You know, you've got to take those calculated risks. That's just part of our damn job. Yeah. And to say you don't want to, you know what? Well, kiss my ass. Get out of the fire service.
Yeah.
We don't need you. Sorry.
Yeah, we have a really good tradition in Kansas City, and one of them that I think works well, especially for the planning and knowing what, like, we almost know always what the other people or teams or fire trucks or apparatuses are going to do.
Yeah.
Like, if you're on a pumper or everyone else, I don't know why we call it pumpers, everyone else in the engine or everyone else in the country calls them engines.
Right.
Like, you're the ones getting water, you're the ones
pulling
hose, doing all that. Where in, like, trucks are really doing truck work. You have your roof guys, you have your interior guys, like, your car wrecks. Your truck is doing all of this, all the stabilizing and all that, and your pumper is doing all the medical stabilization. Like, your rigs are really designated and very specific, which is, I think, really helps out this Kansas City and being able to be aggressive and just the pre-planning's already done. It's been there for decades.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's. I don't know. I get. I'm telling you. I get on the internet these days, and you just got to shut that shit off because everybody's got a voice. Everybody thinks they're relevant, and they're really not. But God.
I mean, everyone can learn. I'm all about like learning as much as I can. I believe when you stop learning is when you die.
Yeah.
So I love. I'm always the new guy somewhere. I love being the new guy. That means I'm learning something. So I just feel like you're learning. So I learn. I'll read articles. I'll read books. I'll learn. Listen to any and everyone on their perspective. But then I also want to know, why do they have that perspective?
Yeah.
Right.
Are they? What area are they in? What are they not in? Like, it's just different perspectives of what you have and apply what you can. And who knows, maybe in my career and I move to, I mean, Kansas City's a huge city. We have, like, nice places. We have not nice places.
Right.
So some stations can probably apply that. So it just, and what we do in my area might not work up north.
Nope.
It's just so, well, you just kind of have to learn as much as you can and roll with it and figure out why. Why does it work for them?
I mean,
that's just because we do stuff one way doesn't mean those guys somewhere else are doing it wrong. Like, it's just different.
No, absolutely. It's like, how many times do you go to a class? You know, I've gotten this, and I'm not saying from guys from my department or anything, but from people that I know in the fire service. You go to classes, you get trained by people like Ray McCormick and these FDNY legends, and obviously Andy Fredericks. You read up on Andy Fredericks, and you input their information into training. Well, we're not New York. Well, no shit. I tried to apply there, but they wouldn't take me. But I'm not asking to do your tactics here, but I'm taking the lessons learned. It goes back to the senior man concept, right?
Yeah.
When that guy brings you into your teams. And he's telling you shut your damn mouth. Just like when you walk into the firehouse that first day and that senior man or that driver sits you at that kitchen table and said, this is how it's going to be, you're going to listen to the words that I say because I'm going to keep your ass safe and you're going to go home. Guess what, man? I'm all ears, homie.
Yep.
I'm all in. Yeah. Of course, I'm not going to do the things the way the FDNY do because I don't have these multi-story high-rises. But what I do have, I have civilians and citizens that I work for that live in residential and taxpayer-type structures and have apartment complexes. I still work in these types of environments, just like you do in the fire service across the world.
Yeah,
we do the same job. Life safety, right? That's property conservation. Yep. Goes back, get your ass inside and put the damn fire out.
Yeah. I mean, you risk a lot to save a lot. I mean, to me, people's lives are a big thing. Like, they didn't set their house on fire on purpose, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully not.
So they just... Yeah. They made a bad error, something happened, whatever, bad situation. It's not their fault. So, I mean, I signed up to help them get out of that. Could be the worst situation of their entire life. So, I mean, it's not a big deal. Like, it's just part of, I guess, being a firefighter or risk that to do it. I don't know.
Well, and there seems to be one of the things that's so prevalent nowadays, and maybe, you know, we always say nowadays and stuff like that, and maybe it's always been there, but there's a certain bitterness towards your fellow man that people like, especially if you've been in a career for a while and you've seen the same thing over and over. Is there anything that you do, or is it just your personality and just kind of your disposition that kind of stays off that bitterness, stays off? Because since you are in a poorer neighborhood, I know how that can get. I grew up in poorer neighborhoods. You can get jaded by people doing the same thing, making the same mistakes, behaving the certain ways and all that kind of stuff. Is there something that you do to decompress and move that bitterness or anything that might be hanging on your shoulders out of the way?
And being that Navy SEAL short-term memory hour-to-hour type thing really plays a big part. I think just leaning on your brothers, really, your brothers and sisters, to be like, I mean, it's not easy going into someone's house who you've seen 15 times and they're drunk again and picking them up off the floor. Like, it's not easy.
Nope.
You're exhausted. You're tired. There's other stuff you could be doing, but
and they're usually
whatever
naked.
Demons. Yeah, whatever demons this person has, it's not. I mean, I guess it could be their fault. It could not be, but it's not my part to judge. That's for whole nother life or afterlife or whatever. I don't care. It's not my part. And I think really having a crew that, you know, some guys just get tired, and that's when you got to step up. Be like, hey man, it's all good. Put a smile on your face and let's go help this guy. Like, I don't know, that short-term memory, because there's nothing you can do about it. It's not going to change no matter how bitter you are. It just is what it is.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask you this. You know, you being in the teams and, you know, Iraq, obviously extremely hostile environment. How much does that heighten your sense of, you know, being on guard, especially on these types of, you know, when you are running these types of calls down in, you know, the lower income area? I'm not saying it's a bad, they're bad people, but you do have that heightened sense of awareness about yourself, about the environment you're in. You know, how, you know, obviously the SEALs hopefully have taught you how to transition.
There's parts of Kansas City. There's pockets of Kansas City that are pretty deadly.
Yeah.
Just a lot of bad going on. I think it's higher than Chicago per 100,000 people or something like that in murders last year. It's I think St. Louis is one of the few ones, and a couple other towns as far as big cities that beat us. So I mean, we have issues going on. I mean, as far as just like, I don't know, like I never stand in front of a door when I knock on a random house. They call 911.
Yep.
Just like little things like that, and I don't know why I do it, but like I do it. My crew does it. Now it's just little things that I think really. I look around the areas, look around different stuff that I think a lot of the older guys do, and I kind of pick that up and just like, oh yeah, I already know how to do that type thing.
Yeah, you learn those little small tricks. Like I'm the same way, man. When I was knocking on doors to get ready to go into someone's house, I never stood in front of that door. I learned real quick. I had an officer that told me, he's like, you never stand right there. And I was like,
God, no.
And he, once we talked about it, I'm like, hey, guess what? You learned something new today.
Yeah.
And it's a piece of advice that I never lost.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I've heard this story or not, but I could easily see, too, like, knock on someone's door, go in there. There's a domestic dispute. Like, that dude doesn't know you're in there. He runs down the stairs. Yep. You're blocked off from the door. Like, I mean, there's bad situations that can happen real quick.
Yeah.
And, like, we don't carry guns or knives or, I mean, what, I got an O2 bottle I might be able to smack you with.
Yeah.
That's about it. You're going in bad areas where people's emotions are high and people can make bad decisions when emotions are high.
Yeah, I mean, they don't think about what they're doing. They just react and they don't care about the consequences.
Well, and always in lower income areas, you have a high drug and alcohol use, and growing up where I grew up, I mean, you would, and just people that I grew up with, you know, once they go down that path, they completely change as a human being. And you know, somebody could be an extremely nice, loving, caring individual one day, and then, you know, they hit the bottle or the pipe and they're a completely different individual.
Yep. It's tragic. Extremely tragic.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're about to wrap this thing up. I'm going to, I'd like to ask you a couple.
Got the questions?
A couple random questions for you as we go along. I try to type these random. They're short answer questions, nothing crazy. But just kind of ties it back to the fire service. What's your favorite firehouse meal?
Firefighter meal?
Yeah, firehouse meal.
Ooh. Man, I feel like the Sunday pots. I mean, I just work Sunday, so I feel like the Sunday pots are always really good at our station. We got those really good, but absolutely favorite. Honestly, probably just like smoked burgers with like bacon and cheese and loaded.
That's what's up. Are you the cook?
No, not a good one. I can do some things here and there. So we have really good cooks at our station now. I did more cooking and I could bake decent, but we don't have time. I don't have time to bake now at this new station. The old one, I used to do any and everything.
Yeah.
Bailey's Irish cream cakes.
Nice.
I've done a couple cheesecakes and stuff. So I've done some good desserts, but we just don't have time for it now. Now it's brownies. Brownies and dessert. That's what I bake.
Heck yeah, man. You can't go wrong. Brownies or chocolate chip cookies. Hell no.
No.
Do you have a favorite podcast or a book?
Favorite podcast or book? You know, I mean, the Joe Rogan podcast is pretty solid, honestly.
Yeah.
I just feel like he has such diverse people on it. You can really get a bunch of different stories, different perspectives. So I enjoy it, almost every one of those.
I still think the Jocko Tulsi Gabbard episode was fantastic.
That
was great. Yeah. That was pretty
good
stuff. Yep. What's some advice? You know, we do have a wide range of listeners here. You know, some, hopefully most people are in the fire service, but those that are not, because we share this on our social media.
Mm-hmm.
But But what kind of advice do you have anyone that is inquiring or interested in going the SEAL route?
Man, really try and get a hold of something. There's a lot of information out there that you can get. And the pipeline changes and the requirements change just to get in the Navy a decent amount. But if you could somehow find a Navy SEAL here and there, like a real one, then really, really pay attention to what they say and really just, you don't know what you don't know, so just always be learning. And stuff is always evolving and changing. So just ask. Don't listen to one recruiter. Go ask multiple people to figure out what's going on. So I know that there's like SEAL mentors out there that people can find if they really want to. So if that's the route you want to go, I would highly recommend trying to find someone who's been there, done that, and has an insight into it.
What is some advice that you have for the new guy stepping foot in your firehouse? You have a new guy coming in tomorrow. What advice are you going to give him?
First, never stop moving. At any point in the day, whether anyone sits down on a couch, doesn't mean you sit down. When you go up, when you eat, eat quick, get to the dishes first, and don't ever give up your spot, no matter what. And the other one is really – you kind of need to look like Mickey Mouse. Big ears so you can hear, big eyes so you can see, and a little mouth so you can shut up.
I love that one.
I like that one a lot.
That was good. Man, I can't thank you enough for joining
us, dude.
This is the best way to start the year. Like I said, we talked back in September. I wanted you on the show. I was happy we could finally get you on. Again, I'm truly thankful that you joined us, man.
Man, absolute pleasure. Thank you guys so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can all get together soon at another event.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we get another Red Coat Challenge. Something maybe a little bit smaller, but you know, just as intense.
I finally healed up, man. I was sore for a while.
I had so much fun, man. I had so much. Those 2 days of having to be up super duper early and then having some drinks and then going to bed, that was that's my kind of time.
I was still laughing at my Canadian boys that turned that entire door prop around. Did a full 360 trying to force that thing. I was like,
that heavy-ass door, they turned that whole thing around.
It was impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive that they swung it that many times and hit it that hard. I mean, it truly impressive.
That piece of wood wasn't giving up.
No, they were locked in there. I was about tired of carrying that damn dummy, though. God almighty, I was wore out.
We need to have a winch next time.
Yeah. No, I just need to bring a new guy in there. Hey,
there
bring
you
it
go.
Back.
Learn from your seniors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much for being on here. Can't wait to release it.
You guys take it easy.
Be good, brother. Thank you. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
10 years.
Dude, he was so much fun to hang out with at the Red Coat Challenge, too. He was so down to earth.
He's one of those guys, you just get that vibe about him. Everybody just draws themselves towards. He's got a personality. He's easy to talk to. You know, he's engaging.
Well, whenever it comes to military, especially as a civilian, whenever it comes to military or civil service, what you see on TV typically is the ego.
Yeah.
You rarely, the guys without the ego, you don't see them on TV screaming and shouting. You don't see them on social media screaming and shouting.
No.
So whenever I've been so fortunate to come across, to get to see everybody kind of in their natural environments, more or less. And like right away, as soon as meeting him, just chill, laid back, just could tell that he was just a good, genuinely good person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, yeah, he was good to be around. I enjoyed the conversations with him when we had a lot of really good shit talking back and forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, going back to I think he even made fun of me. He's like, "You're going to drag that dummy back and forth?" I was like, "Yep." And then I paid for it the next day. I was in bad shape.
Yeah, but that thing, at least two people carried it whenever they had their teams. But the fact that you had to do it over and over again, Jesus Christ.
We had 20 teams and two. That was 20 times that I at least had to move it.
I'm telling you, man, there's definitely a truck out there that we can put a winch on, and you can just drag it back through the freaking door.
Oh, man. No, it was a good time. But
you're working hard enough out there with those guys. You don't need to be working that extra.
No, it was good, though, to have Andrew. You know, he gave his duty to this country. He's serving his local community now in Kansas City. His story's awesome.
Yeah.
Just like I said, a genuinely great individual, and you know, like everyone else that's ever served, you know, we're forever indebted to them.
Absolutely,
because they did something that we weren't either A, willing or B, unable to do, and you know, thankful for them.
Happy International Law Enforcement Day!
It was
yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
So thank you for your service. We truly appreciate you putting yourself on the front lines of our communities and for everything that you do. And as much hate as y'all have gotten over the last couple of years, we want you to know that we know the bad apples aren't any part of the good apples, and we know who the good apples are and what you do for your community. He was mentioning his dad.
Yep.
His dad's service and as a police officer, and he mentioned his dad with DARE, and I can tell you the DARE officer, I'll never forget my DARE officer, Officer Huckleby, in my small town.
That is like a movie.
And what he did for me, I mean,
it's a movie. Gary.
And he was just a genuinely good person who cared about the kids in his community, and it got us off, you know, we grew out of it, but it got us off the streets whenever we were younger, and then we went back to the streets later. But I'll never forget that guy. So
that's how ours is. He was a family friend. He was our SRO. That was our Officer Kane is his name, mm-hmm. and family friend. His wife, I think, worked with my dad, and so I always had that watchful eye over me at all times. And he was a towering individual. He was a big guy, but he was helping keep everybody on the straight and narrow. So we thank you guys. Yeah, law enforcement, you guys get a bad rap from everyone. I mean, not everyone, for bad actors. But we are, again, just truly thankful for what you guys have done. I know a lot of great law enforcement personnel.
Absolutely.
That are personal friends of mine, and I hold them all near and dear to my heart, just like I do everybody in the military and the fire service. I thank you guys for always taking up that badge and taking up the oath, because no one else is going to do it. They're just going to bitch and complain about you.
Yep.
That's it.
And regardless of what anybody says, we do need that protection, because just as there's bad apples in the police force, there's bad apples in society. And somebody has to be there to protect us from them.
Yep. So, well, that was a good one.
Yeah.
That's how we start year 10 off.
Happy New Year, year 10.
Happy New
Year, yep. I'm going to try to do the 10-year challenge and see what I can find from back in the day, and maybe share a nice young picture of Bird and see how he's aged over the years.
The Only Easy Day Facebook page is hilarious, because I see Bird's picture pop up every now and then.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. And I'll text him like, bro.
That's hilarious.
That blonde hair. I'm like, come on, man.
Oh, I've got to see that.
It's awesome.
I need to follow that one. Okay.
But, you know,
we appreciate y'all listening, and thank you for joining us in another year. 2022 is going to be fantastic. We're really looking forward to having some guests that have been with us for the past 10 years. We want to get on some more burn survivors, a couple more doctors that we're working with. You know, we have our pediatrics program swinging, and we have some very exciting news about one of our patients, a gentleman who I won't share his name, but it's going to be exciting whenever he comes out to see, so you can see what kind of surgeries he's gotten. It's really changed his life.
Sons of the Flag, man, we're doing it.
Yeah.
We haven't stopped.
Nope.
And it's because of you guys always supporting us and spreading our message. You know, it's so easy just to hit that share button on Facebook or Instagram.
Yep.
And spread our message. You know, we're forever grateful for you guys. You can always find us, and for more information and more about us, at www.sonsoftheflag.org. And, you know, we're on all social media at Sons of the Flag.
Absolutely.
Go to our website, look up our task force members, join the task force. If you need to fill out an application, there's an application on the front page.
Yep, and Greg will reach out to you.
Greg, and then, I was talking about for burn survivor.
Oh, but for
Greg,
burn survivor.
Yeah, for task, yes, task force members, Greg will reach out.
And we have a
burn survivor help
form.
Yep, and Sherry will be in contact with you, and Sherry's an angel, and she works her ass
off. She works her ass off. She has gotten so many flights set up at the end of the year to get some, I mean, my ass took my 2-week break. I took that whole 2 weeks. I got fat off it, and I drank way too much. And she was still sending emails and kicking ass.
She was destroying it, man.
I knew I had to come back and do something big.
So we want to thank Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio for, again, having us back. You know, we're extremely thankful that they put this show on their site. We want to thank each and every single one of our listeners, all of our supporters, everybody that's ever supported Sons of the Flag.
Absolutely.
All of our military first responders, you know, just thank you from the bottom of our hearts for always being there for us. And again, www.sonsoftheflag.org, and look us up on all social media at Sons of the Flag.
And so, we'll be back with the next episode March 15th. So look forward to that one.
If y'all have any ideas of who we need to talk to, send them to us.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I would love to hear y'all's ideas. I've got my ideas. Landon's got some ideas. But we would love to hear what you guys want. So, again, thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay passionate, and always keep the mission first.